Blog Talk Radio.
It's the morning show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good morning, Deborah.
Okay, we're going to assume that we are on live. If so, this is Blog Talk Radio with Cheryl Smith, who's here at the moment. My name is Deborah Brown Stearns, and I have some guest panelists with me this evening, and they can do better justice producing themselves more than I can. Again, I said my name is Deborah Brown Stearns. I'm still in for Cheryl Smith. I am a retired teacher of 32 years and a retired events coordinator in Dallas. So today I will introduce you to Mr. Ray Cortez Butler, and he will introduce himself.
Hello, my name is Ray Cortez Butler. Nobody ever says that, definitely not as Ray. Or around the neighborhood, but most people call me. I am currently an HR analyst for Lockheed Martin Corporation, which is a U.S. defense builder of airplanes for the Air Force and all military services by day. By evening, I am a newly owner and CEO of the Reckless Leader Corporation, which is a business I have started in 2020 with my mother, where we do transformative speaking engagements. Youth and women empowerment. Just come in and speak to youth or people of our age to build bridges and let people know that there are 100 million methods and means of getting the destiny that you want, and we are just getting started. So I am excited to be able to be on this podcast with y'all this morning.
Okay. Next, we have Mr. Jeffrey Robinson. He's going to tell us about himself.
Good morning, everyone. Once again, Don Robinson. I'm the president of DeVoe Robinson Consultants. We work with niche marketing, but also the business and especially this. I've been involved in the civil rights movement and down the country through the Southern British Conference. So it's an honor to be a part of this podcast on this morning.
Okay, next we have Magnolia Taylor.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Magnolia Taylor, and I have to see one this morning. I am a retired substitute teacher in the Dallas area and also in Stafford with Fort Bend ISD. I'm also a manager, and also currently right now I do homeschooling, and I'm enjoying every bit of it because of this pandemic. I get to homeschool with my grandson. He's excited. I'm excited, and I'm glad to see him.
Okay. Next, we have Ms. Kalia Coleman.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kalia Coleman, and I am a member, actually, and Ray. I'm very excited to be here. I'm a United States attorney. I work for the Department of Justice, the United States Attorney's Office here in Illinois, which is now Northern District of Illinois. I'm also the immediate past president of the Black Women Lawyers Association of Illinois, and we spend a lot of time, and I'm very involved in bar association work, where we work to increase diversity in the legal profession. The legal profession still has a long way to go with respect to helping Black and Brown men and women, and a lot of help working on those issues. This year, we are initiating a voter campaign. Hopefully, get out as many people as we can to vote because it's a very, very important election. I'm excited to be here.
Okay. Next, we have Misha Stearns. I don't know if she connected with us yet, but Misha, if you are there, please say something. Misha, are you there?
Backstage.
I think she's still. So we'll check with backstage. Okay. Today we have some topics that we think that everybody is interested in and everybody is a part of as of right now, whether we were participating part of it, whether we wanted to be or willing, all in this together. Today, hopefully, we can get to this something about police brutality and the coronavirus. Okay, so we're going to start off this morning. As I am being in for Cheryl Smith with Bob Powell, and my name is Deborah Brown Stern. First thing we have, we all know that police brutality is real. We all know that unnecessary stops and arrests are made up on Blacks because of race. And unfortunately, a lot of times it ends in death. This has been going on for centuries. So why was George Floyd's death so explosive? Was it video of his death? Was it timing of the death? Was it because COVID-19 that had people at home if they could pay attention to this? Because we all heard and saw him begging and pleading for his life in restraints. So let's start with Don. What are your opinions first?
He needs to unmute himself.
Don?
I'm here. I'm sorry. Convergence.
Did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. I think it's a convergence of it all.
Okay.
I believe that as we saw what we did, and because of the pandemic, I think you can't separate one from the other, with the exception of the sorrow and the hurt and the pain of George Floyd dying. But I think when we begin to look at history and even look at just recent history, there comes a time where there's a convergence of external and internal forces. And I think that...
Oh, shit. Are they on Facebook, though? Facebook is streaming.
To the what?
Oh, God.
Okay,
I just want to get it. And you have to put messages. Okay. Okay, I gotta go to my phone. Okay, we're having a little bit. We're going to try to get that straight. Can you hear them? Sure.
Voting Rights Act. Now you have voter suppression taking place. But voter suppression takes place to benefit a certain grouping of people. And so what happens is that as long as there are those who sit in positions of power or gatekeeper, they're not going to want to change it. Think about the U.S. House has passed about D.C. becoming a state. Look what some of the people said in the Senate. No, we don't want that. And some have been very transparent because to do that, that means you may have two black senators who will be able to come from that. And now it's going to be a strip of the power. If you do the same thing for Puerto Rico, they're going to let two Puerto Rican senators to come in. That, once again, is going to bring an imbalance in the power. So people in a certain in positions of authority saying, we don't want that because it's going to take away the power in the groups of a certain number of people. So what has to happen, once again, is that, as we tell our young people, it comes from voting. Mm-hmm. The bullet is at the ballot box. If you're a billionaire or if you only make $10,000 a year, you're equal in the ballot. You're equal when you go out there and vote. But it's getting more people to realize how important it is, what that vote can do. Because even in the frustration among a lot of especially black folk is that when we thought there was going to be change, four or five people were able to come in and say, we don't want that, and there was no change. Think about Florida. Florida, Kalia, for what? Ex-felons be able to get in the vote. But what did they do? They came back in and said, no, if you got a fee, if you owe money for a probation officer, parole, you can't vote. That's like a poll.
Absolutely.
So now they're having to take that. And so then when the appeals court says that that's unconstitutional, they should be able to vote. Now you got the state of Florida saying, we're going to take the Supreme Court. Think about that. An avenue of people to vote who couldn't vote for years. And you got people in power saying, we don't vote because those who vote, I'm probably vote Democrat. So now we're going to lose power. So to keep the power, we're going to be sure to keep the side of the court. It is on the history, of people who are those who are in control, and many times it's not based upon whether you're black or white. It's upon, are you going to take away from me what I want? And if you're going to take that away from me, then I'm going to fight you to keep you from taking that away. And our country is so politicized, so polarized right now, based on politics. Politics has become a religion. When you go around, you say that I'm a conservative Christian, or liberal Christian. Think about what you're saying. That means that you're the adjective. You're no longer the noun. So it's not about you being a Christian. It's about you being conservative or liberal. I'm a white Christian. I'm a black Christian. Now you become the adjective, and you're no longer the noun. Politics has now become the religion. And so if you want to protect your belief, that's basic. Why is Trump? Because he's giving us conservative justice. He's giving us, but if he lies, things will accept. Saying our morals and the ethics of our country. So you're right, it should be changed, but then again, change for who? If it's changed, who's it going to benefit?
Right.
Yeah. Now it's going to give a number of people power, and then what's going to happen right now, those who have power for so long, they're going to go, we don't want this, and so we will be sure voters suppression, we'll be sure we spread lies, we'll be sure that we spread disinformation. You've got people out there saying, well, you go all in ballot, it's gonna be something you got voter fraud. Those same people have been doing mail-in ballots for years themselves. But yet they're saying that it's wrong, that you know it's like voter fraud was gonna, but you do it, but yet you're saying same thing with our constitution.
Mm-hmm.
It takes away power from one group, and if they don't want power taken away, then you smack the Supreme Court with conservative judges. Who are not supposed to be political. Now the Senate has allowed that the 200th federal judge that served for life conservative. 90% of them are white males. That's for decades that we're going to feel that in the United States. So this talk about a change of the Constitution has got to be groundswell, and it's got to be to where we tell a politician that if you don't do this the way we want to, we're going to vote you out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way it's going to change. So if you're going to my high horse, be emotional.
Well, I think we have Ray and...
Sorry about that. I think we have just to finish up what we were talking about, let me repeat the statement. It says the protesters acted with all of the Confederate statues, and I think we should be talking about how to get rid of Confederate laws and rules of the Constitution. Like the ones for the Electoral College vote that elected that president. Anyway, question to us, why haven't the Constitution laws of centuries, and why can't the leaders today see that they're simply outdated? Ray, what do you think?
First, let me jump in and say before I log off, I did take the chance to say that many of my views are not a reflection of Lockheed and Corporation, but a reflection of my own personal thought, and I didn't get to say it like you said before I logged off. Important to assess the foundation of what these laws were formed on. They were formed for the protection of Caucasian people. These laws formed to keep certain people in certain places and to keep certain people out of certain places. And so if we are assessing why these laws and why these statements and why these statues are still prevalent in today, is because of the that we have in the leadership position that are not willing to change because they were in place for these people to be able to stay in place. I think when I jumped in on the conversation, there was maybe some people going about the Supreme Court. I'm not 100% sure, going in and out a little bit. If we look, there's only one African American judge on the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas.
And color.
Of color. And I have a different view because I am prone to believe Anita Hill. So I won't go into verbatim on that, but we have only one in seat of a whole panel of Supreme Court judges, and that speaks right there. Where is the rest of the diversity? Where is the rest of the advocation for the Supreme Court? And even with him being a man of color, there are certain things that he does not agree with as well. Like I read once that he was not in favor of LGBTQ laws for certain trans individuals or individuals that fall into the LGBTQ community. And so we also have to assess the people that we have in place and recognize that these are lifetime seats that these people have. They literally have to pass away or choose to retire out of these seats before other people can assume the position of being a Supreme Court justice. And so I think that by assessing the people that we have in place, we need to assess the foundation of these laws and statutes, and that's where they need to be changed. There need to be different rules in place. I feel that no person should be able to serve in any capacity for a lifetime because things change. And so just as a president only gets 8 years to be in office, a Supreme Court justice should only get 10 years to be in their seat. You know, we want to be fair across the board. And so I think that that is a main thing that we have to assess as we go through realizing why these things are in the place that they are, so that we can incorporate change and get people in positions to be able to call shots and make things different for us.
Right. Just a funny thing. Anita Hill is the least of Clarence Thomas's issues. And you mentioned he is a man of color, but his ideology and what he has done and service that he has done just read up a little bit more on him. Yeah, it's mind-blowing.
So I used Anita Hill because I actually just watched Nation yesterday, which is why spoke on her, because I really think that Carrie Washington played a phenomenal in that movie, depending on Anita Hill. So that's why I said, among other issues he has, I stand with and believe her, because of my impression watching that movie. We definitely need some change.
All right, Misha, are you on? Misha? Still no Misha yet? Summers, don't start him. Anyway, we do not have any laws on the internet or social media, which is present and future. The now generation and the next generation do not have rules or laws for the internet or cyberspace. So my question is, will the next generation go without rules and laws to abide by, or will they have to contend with the old constitution being around for the next generation? What do you guys think? Are they going to make any changes as far as the constitution, or are they just going to accept it and let it as is?
Deborah, I am so lost. I need you to repeat it one more time, because you was going in and out.
Okay, I think we have to slow down. Okay, start over, because I see I'm in and out. We do not have any rules or laws for the internet or social media, which is our present and our future. The now generation and the next generation do not have rules and laws for the internet or cyberspace. Question is, will the next generation grow up, abide by the internet, or will the old, outdated constitution be around for the next generation?
Okay.
What do you think, Magnolia?
I really think with this next generation, I think they're going to be able to set a lot of their own rules. I think we see a big change in probably within the next 10 years, 5-10 years. The next generation is going to do it right now. Mm-hmm. They're going to get out and they're going to stand. And if we don't give it to them, they're going to start taking things. I mean, they're just going to, they really aren't going to start demanding. They wanted certain laws. And I need to be fair, but I don't think they're going to just act like years and years old. I think we are in that era now where, maybe some of the things in the Constitution may be able to change also.
Okay. Ray, what do you think about the internet and cyberspace? Why don't we have any rules or laws for them, or do we need any rules or laws?
I don't think that we have any rules or laws for the internet or cyberspace, because in a period of time where people have the ability to be excessive as they should, as a working professional, there are certain platforms that I utilize for certain reasons. And I place restrictions on these platforms and audiences. And so I think that the thing we as younger people understand is that we need to assess our demographics, because there are certain things I say to my Twitter followers that I say to my Facebook following, because my Twitter following is a demographic of younger professionals that we're more inclined to be more laid back and expressive, as opposed to friends with older generations of people on Facebook and on other platforms. Whereas my Twitter following may be intimate group or intimate body of people I could speak more freely of, and I have more restrictions such as privacy, may allow certain people to follow me. It's a private page, so I have to give you access to that. Whereas on Facebook, it's more people from my job, people from my community that I may be able to speak to. And so I definitely don't think that there are rules in place, nor do I think that rules should be set in place. I think that it's all in accordance to the individual's mind frame of how they choose to utilize their social media. Because once a person signs up for a certain social media account or a certain website or something like that, it's to their discretion of what they want to post. They have to take into context the communities and the organizations that they represent, but they still have to be authentic and be aware of who they are and aware of their audiences to be able to say things that they want to say. And I just circle that back around to saying I may say something a little more slang formality on Twitter as opposed to it will be more professional in a Facebook setting. There are certain people. So I don't think that there will be much of a change with it, nor do I think there should be change incorporated in it.
I understand about the free speech, social media, and what they want to say and how they want to express themselves. I guess I should have made it a little bit clear. I'm talking about these folks who want to go around here and hack everything in sight and think they should not be accountable for it, be responsible for it. And I personally have been hacked. My checking account, I knew the person, well, I knew his name, had his phone number, where it was from, this, that, and the other, and I'm taking it to the bank, and they say, there's nothing we can do. Nothing you can do?
So
there are no laws, no rules. Okay, Khalid, what are you saying?
I just want to speak to the issue. Now that you sort of narrowed the question and structured it a little bit. So there are laws in place that will deal with the very situation that you brought out. Just at my job, a lot of people are indicted on fraud charges or different type of charges that stem from things that they did through the of the internet. What makes it tricky is because when you have internet, you're able to use things called like the dark web and different things like that. They may be able to commit a crime and you can't trace back to where that person was. But I don't think that's a legal issue. It's just more a function of how the internet works. You have IP addresses, but if you committed the crime not from your home, but maybe you where your IP address is registered to a Starbucks, how are they going to prove that it was you, right? Because there are tons of people in that Starbucks that will all have their devices will be traced back to that IP address. So it's more of a question of how is the law and the statutes that we have in place right now, how is it going to catch up? How are we going to catch up to the sophistication of some of the folks who use the internet in order to, in many respects, circumvent laws or make it more difficult to trace the criminal offense that's being committed. But we do have laws in place currently to deal with type crimes and different things like that. Those laws do exist. Initially, I thought you were talking more from the First Amendment perspective, which is what I touched on. The First Amendment doesn't give you a right to say whatever it is that you want to say. There's something called the clear and present danger test. You can't run into a theater and yell out fire. Even social media platforms like Facebook, there are often times where they'll strip down certain posts or certain types of things if the content is obscene. Obscenity is against the law or different things like that. So I do think you have laws. It's just a matter of it's very difficult to prosecute or hold people legally accountable when they use the benefit of the internet to commit their crime. We can't
work. The reason they couldn't do anything is because this person who was trying to hack into an account in another country trying to hack into my account. So I'm like, how do we prevent this from happening? And how do we hold people accountable who's not even in our same country? You know, what kind of rules and laws are we supposed to abide by over here, which is different from what they're doing over there that's affecting us here? That's what I'm talking about. And I also met with the Constitution as it is and as it stands. It just needs to be updated. That thought on it. Magnolia, what are you thinking? Oh,
Deborah, I think Deborah, I have a question that Kalia, she answered most of where they're online place. One of the largest divisions of the FBI deals with cyber, deals with those type of crime laws. And so what Ray was talking about is is that this generation is bringing a lot of Facebook and Twitter now. They're coming on board and saying that if there's a political message out there that is misinformed or producing some type of disinformation, that they do acknowledge that. In fact, Facebook has a lot of advertising because the ACLU has got together group of advertisers, and they said that because you're not censoring this hate crime that's on there. And that was brought up by people getting together and they were fighting this. We're going to reach out and we're going to start attacking this. And I think you brought an issue for personal, there are laws out there that address that. And once again, hacking is that you big time. You go to prison for hate speech. You know, if sitting somewhere, you say, I want to go to prison. I joined you so quick and put you in and put your handcuffs and take you away. Laws are out there. And I think it's understanding those laws, and those laws have really nothing to do with the Constitution, because the Constitution talks about free speech, but you have the FCC out there. FCC is the one who has to govern the internet. What you see with the FCC is that you have people on the FCC who are being told by the lobby what to do with that. So then you have different committees or commissions that do things to make sure you get the people on there who are going to govern laws. The thing that Khalilia was mentioned about is true. The previous administration got laws against this. This administration came in and they just took away all the laws. I mean, they just got to say, you know what? It's not needed. We don't want this. And so I'm sorry, Deborah, there are laws in place. And just today, if you go to the bank or whatever, and say, you go to the police department. It's about to get to the FBI and trace that for you. Because by law, they have to do that. There are divisions now that will take care of that information. There are laws out there that deal with speech, hate speech, that deal with hacking, that deal with cybercrime. There are laws out there for that.
There, but usually it's for the big company, government, and, you know, here in individual people have actually gone through this and end up in vice. They lose their money on the internet, or they, so whoever hacked them, they're going to be traced. You know, their money is gone, and they're to the police or the government or whatever. Their money is gone. They're not getting it back. That's what I'm saying. There are laws to protect. So you were account, you can go and make report what, but you get your money back. That's the part that's the problem. Okay, we're gonna go on. Let me do my commercial break. This is Blog Talk Radio with Shirley Burns. Hey, welcome back. Hello. I was just about to do your commercial. Let people know that they need to fill out census forms. I have been practicing doing this. I have. And they need to register and go vote, stand up and be honest, and also be safe. And I have to say, if you don't have a mask, it's coming towards you. You just don't take. Can't touch this. Walk and leave. Done. Welcome back, Cheryl.
Hey, I've been enjoying.
You want to?
Yes, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is or Facebook or Blog Talk Radio Saturday, because I just got off a discussion about Black business. I think that here, so things kind of, did here, that someone served 10 years? 10 years
in what?
Supreme Court, 10 years.
Oh no, Ray was speaking about how he does not believe that Supreme Court justices should have lifetime tenure, that they should be restricted to term limits, just like you know, let's say the president or congressional members, how they have to run for office again, that Supreme Court justices should be held to that same standard.
And Ray said 8 years for president, that's just 8 years for president, should be 10 for Supreme Court. That's what you said, right?
Yes.
And that's the thing, I just want to ask, did you have a, why did you say 10 years?
Right, muted.
Right.
And I can't hear the question that she just asked me.
Oh, okay.
She sent me through my text.
Ray, you can't hear me. Oh. I was wondering where the 10 years.
You want to get like that question that Ms. Shirley asked me?
Sure, I'll lay it. So earlier you were talking about Supreme Court justices and how you believe that they shouldn't have lifetime tenure.
I chose the number. And ugly, a random number came in my head. But I think that if we have the highest elected on a time limit in the state, the same rules should apply for the highest elected judiciary court system as well. I think that when certain cases or things go to this body of people, is they're serving a lifetime tenure, and they're holding these seats and keeping these seats until they either elect to leave, retire, or pass away. At 21, does not incorporate across that board of judges. And number two, we're not moving in an inclusive manner to incorporate from just people with their thought processes, people who want to include other ideas. And so I think that allowing these judges to have a 10-year lifespan on holding these allows us to not be as aggressive as we could be when it comes to certain things. And so 10 was just a number that chose out of each, but standing behind there should definitely be a time limit included for these people just as there is for the president, so that we can have people moving in, have more progressive ideas every now and again. We're getting an opportunity to see different people.
And you know what? You make a lot of sense. Can you hear me? Can you hear
me? Can you hear her?
I can.
I'm saying good things about making good sense for the argument, but this is where an issue, because I am team young people, because let me help by helping finance the revolution, if you will, because you need to be out there and you need to stay on the forefront. But I just asked arguments behind it, not arbitrary numbers on it, because it dilutes the argument and changes the focus.
Not really. I don't think he could hear her.
No.
So she said she 100% agrees with your rationale that you just explained as to why you get a number 10, but I think that's what you're trying to say, there's term limits, because he thinks that it's important that there's substantive meat to the arguments that are being, as opposed to drawing out arbitrary numbers, like really gives the attention is back up with the fact that it's 5 years for term limits and different things like that.
And let me give as an example, and I know you can't hear, but we talk about term limits. I think as you change the overall structure of the system of government nationally, you can't say you need to have term limits in Washington. You can really have an impact. I venture to say, and I think what you all have to say about all the squad and everybody, we would not have as much coming from them if this were, for example, an Obama administration. It's easier to be, because they're having to fight more, they have more a voice, because they're fighting Trumpism, if you know. You don't hear as much from your freshman electorate. They don't have as much influence if they are in power, if their party is in power. And then also, we have a few black people who have chairmanship. You don't get those chairmanships in the first term, second term, third term. And then, too, for me, for black people, they only talk about term limits with black people. Like Ray said, white people die in office, but black people, as I have to get out, someone said they were running Congress this time around. They said they only wanted to go in. They want to get in and do like 6 years and make their impact out. That usually doesn't happen. And if you know Congress, you know how it works. You know that. And you're getting in there and getting knowing where all the nooks and crannies and bathrooms and everything else are. And your turn will be up. So, you know, I love the argument from young people, but you have to say, this is why. And it goes. Don, you've been a newspaper editor, and there was a time when young journalists could not be columnists. This was pre-blog and all of that, because they felt that any commentary that you had, it didn't have the meat to go with it. Like your commentary might say, and 80% of people believe you, you say, okay, according to who? There's nice and arbitrary numbers thrown out there. And you have to have meat there. Giving a writing story, you have to have three sources to give meat to it. And that's what I want to help young people to have meat to their argument and let's move on. Because some people locally, you need to do the work. You need to know what the job entails. You need to also understand that it's about being a celebrity. And we do have a lot of celebrityism going on in elected office, right? That's a whole lot to. You know, but
Sheriff, you don't mind me. Yeah, Sheriff, you mind me chiming in what you say. And one thing, the early years of getting involved with being a part of the movement of civil rights, and Sheriff was saying that you not only had to know the history of who you were going against, and so it was more of protesting last than the first. What came first was research. Third, engaging other people. Then you got it so that when you were challenged, when you had those in front of you, you know why they were there, you know why they were doing it. But then they challenged you to come up with a solution, you have to be ready to spend the place for it. And so, as much as I enjoy the passion, all that, the amount among young people to take with sure, is that it's not that it's missing, because I think it's up to to tell them. Peter Johnson is teaching a civil rights course at UNT Dallas. You have to turn people away from there, because it's one thing when they're reading the history books, but when he's speaking about being there, it changes the whole dynamic. He gives so much that's in the background of what's happening, and it blows them away. So you've got other professors and administrators who are in the class who want to hear this history and go, I didn't know that happened. That's what really happened. And so now there are young people coming out there who are getting up with them. They're more powerful. They know the real history behind why it took place, why it happened, and the historical solutions that either worked or did not work. Sure, I agree with everything you're saying, and kudos to you continue to have that mantra with the people that you work with.
You know,
it's
important.
It's
not
giving me a synopsis of what here.
I said it in three words in my chat. That's what you see in the chat.
I still can't hear.
Right. Look at chat.
the chat box.
I said I love it. And things just, they're in the class here.
Okay.
They're in class with Peter.
Okay, so I got a little
John Spire. No, that's what. And
basically, you're doing a great job, and I'll touch base with you afterwards to let you know. Okay.
Okay, because I can't, for some reason, I can't hear what Ms. Cheryl is saying, but I also want to agree with Don when he spoke about history and the experience of getting under the wing of people who have been a part of movements and who have come before. One of the most important things that I value, and not only myself, but I have a group of seven of best friends who are young professionals in different capacities of career, and the opportunity to be mentored by other people who have already gone forth and done a lot of the things that we like to do. And so,
that brother is where are you?
You don't see me? Let's see again. I'm trying to get back to him. My camera went out.
This brother is sharp.
All right.
He is really sharp, and we need to support that.
What about that?
You still can hear me.
Okay. I can hear me. Sure. I was saying, me and the primary reason why I with these people because of the way that they think and how you feel. If you're looking at my background, I'm sitting at home of my 25-year-old twin best friends who just purchased their first home last week. Something that our parents did not get to do at home. That they consulted with people who had gone on and done before to be a part of their process and be able to do that. So I definitely agree. And I'll say that while I was going through my master's program, I found it imperative to be able to talk with people like you all who were professors or leaders on campus who were teaching classes to be able to not give me a word or a passage to read, but that I could have a dialect to be able to say, this is what I do not understand about this. That you are a part of this, and I know that this is something that I want to know about. But I definitely think that, yeah, it is very much so important to know and to set the history of the things you are interested in to be able to move forward and give a valid opinion. In speech, I said 10 years a random number, but in rationale, I set them behind. The tenure of the justice should be removed.
Right.
And so I won't get an exact number of what I think right now. That was just a number that I threw out there, but I definitely stand behind the rationale of I don't think they change the tenure. So thanks for the being. And yes, you definitely have to make sure that as young people filling out the census. I know in all my friends get important imperative. Our rights to vote, and even in Houston, having a good time is just still a for such traditions. So, yeah.
You know, are you familiar with Public Enemy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You look at the long version, and they're talking about the march on 63. And Chelsea Thompson is talking about, you know, basically saying, you know, enough of those marches in. And we do things different. That was in 1989. So that was 31 years ago. So we're having people saying today in your group, like they're saying, like, we aren't our grandparents, or, you know, and it's like sometimes your grandparents have felt that has been a little disrespectful. Because what the grand did made it possible for you to do what you're doing today. So there has to be that respect, has to be that let's talk. If I wanted to run for office, I'm going to spend with some time with the people in those offices. I don't know about you. I'm a different type of person. When someone comes to town, when Dorothea Irene Height used to come to town, and I was in the room, I would go up to her and say, how are you doing? Can I get you? I want to have some water. I just wanted to be able to serve the people who had done so much for so many people. And sometimes we tend to pick on one another in an effort that we need. And that is where I like it to start. So when a young people out there, I'm trying to get with another thing that you all do is different. You all don't have a problem. And I know Deborah knows I called her because I stopped talking to my mom. I said, hell in front of her. And I was like, and I was in my 50s. Hell. And I was like, oh, I can't talk to her. I didn't want to look at her in the face. But then Deborah's a good tithing member of Concord. And she told me, she's like, hell is in the Bible. So I kind of felt a little better. But you all are my cousin in front of older people. Then, you know, the conversation, sometimes the conversation is just like, can we work together? Can we respect one another? Can we, you know, and I'm not going to tell you, older people, I get on them because if I'm your brothers, I'm not afraid of you. You are my young brother. You are young men in my community, but too often I see we act like we're afraid of you. And don't try to help you. I ask you what you want. You may not want the job that I have because you see me coming home today. I don't want that. But look at the money you made. So, you know, I just, you know, there's difference. And 31 years ago, we're saying that Mars 63 was updated. There's just a way we have to come together with the real enemy. And the enemy cannot be us. The enemy cannot be us. I don't know. I can't keep your pants a sagging. I do know that I fundamentally believe the brothers' pants sagging, it isn't a style thing. They make a statement. Because style change, trends change, that is saying. It's like flat lines that generate have to get in their pants. They're making a statement to us, and we need to listen. And that's why, you know, I love hearing you. And you have the answers. Like, we have to work together as a package, and we have to work together to support. And we have to realize, instead of saying, I don't understand where you're coming from, come say, help me. You don't understand what's happening with me because I was born last century. Like, you know, we have to have that conversation that's turning on each other.
Let me first rebut and say, and and Kalia know, Miss Tomlin is about to Mr. Butler to play Not in Name. I'm gonna get country Not in Name guys with cussing in front of older people.
And call by their first name. Call by their first name too.
We don't play that. So first off, let me pay homage to Miss Ernest Butler, Colleen saying Ernest Butler, my mom and educator, my father, supervisor work for the state of Mississippi, who asked me to be to stand, you know, strong and firm in what I believe in. They are very supportive of me, I passionate about, but who also taught me to stand up straight, looking in the eye and always be when you say that people of our demographic say we are a little bit and say that they don't mean it in a disrespectful manner, and I'm apologizing for all of those who take them disrespectful. It's not that saying not our grandparents or our disrespect to older generations. It's saying that we're not our grandparents. We're more. We have more rights. There's social media that's a black value. We are supporting our grandparents. We're not afforded. And I know that, I've never used that mantra, but I know some, and I can't speak for all people who do, but I know that some people who utilize that mantra mean it in a manner. They mean it in a disrespectful manner. So use some guidance because we're not supported. Thankful to myself, I have my cousin who is a U.S. attorney who I could pick up the phone and call at any time while I was in undergrad, while I was in college, while I struggled when I did something about a policy when I just wanted to. Or I have my aunt who lives in Texas who whenever I needed and that I needed to speak with, she would answer. Or I had my mother calling me and my Ernest at home to stir me off track or whenever I was trying to talk to in class. But a lot of people don't have the opportunity to be afforded. And what I learned going into understanding friends with a lot of people and open conversations and be insensitive to their struggle because they're not like me. What I have to do is ask them what are the things that make up what you're going through and what can I do to help you.
The journey.
And it is a challenge. It is a challenge. What were you going to say, Kalia?
Oh, no. I understand 100% what Ray is saying, but I also understand where you were coming from, Cheryl. I must admit, it's funny, I saw on Facebook protesters that don't be confused, we are not our ancestors, and I was very offended by it, because I knew what they were saying on the surface. I knew that they were not disrespectful, but messaging is important. And I didn't know if there was like a lack of awareness of recognizing that the very benefits you have right now, protest and to not, you know, tear gas and things like that, but you're not being held down the street. And there's a different level of accountability that people are held to that you're that opportunity. You're educated and you're able to be aggressive because you go to any school on, for the most part, that you want to attend. Ancestors didn't have that. You have to fight through and get Brown versus education passed so that you have. I'm a big proponent of being careful about the words that you use. And I also am big on history. So another part of it to me was, do they really understand that history? I always tell people, I take my history with me everywhere I go. So in any time when I am, you know, feeling discouraged, or, you know, feeling that I'm not putting my best foot forward, I pull back and I think, my ancestors, I have no right to be lazy. I have no right to pay it forward. I have no right to not mentor those behind me, because you know what? I'm right where I am because of my ancestors and the fight that they endured for me, that's the right that I have today. And I always tell people that I feel like if history books were written and taught in a certain way, or we educate the people who know our history, take it upon themselves to go and educate the youth about their history, there'd be a different level of responsibility that you feel. There'd be a different level of pride that you have about your culture, because you'll understand where you came from and the power of Black people historically and what we have overcome to help motivate you to do well. So, Ray, I totally understand your point. But you think that's younger generation, and I'm a part of that too, to be careful about the message, because we don't, have time for divisiveness. We all need to be united, and we need to give the respect that is due to the older generation to make sure that we're all moving forward.
Agree with that. I wasn't saying I agree with the sentiment. I want to kind of down a little bit. That is 100% true. And I think that one of the most important things that we as young people have at an advantage is people like you are. So the greatest lesson that I have been able to learn the importance of, no matter where I
am. I know we have all had a great time, but this is about 60 seconds before we're shut down. So I want to say thank you to all of you all for participating in this, and thank you to Cheryl for allowing
us to have this time to confess ourselves. So to each and every one of you, I do appreciate we've had time. I'm sure everybody has a lot more to say. So when she gets a chance, if she invites us back again, I don't know.
Hey, we have to do this again. Each of you, can you hear me? I'm playing this song for Ray.
We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
On to the next soul. Hey, listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing.
Hey,
giving what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing while the black band's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need.
Hey,
our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the power. That's me. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power! 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 We got to fight the power, that's me! Algorithms designed to bounce without successful
lies.
Designed to fill your mind, now that you realize the prize of us. We got to force the stuff to make it up. From the heart, it's the start of work of art to revolutionize, make a change, something great.
People,
we all the same, no one not the same, cause we don't know.